You're listening to the Light Novel Podcast. Visit us online at lightnovelpodcast.com. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Light Novel Podcast. In this episode, we're going to be catching up with a series that we haven't talked about for a while. Some time ago, when I hit around 10,000 subscribers on YouTube, we threw the question out to listeners, what series should we go back and cover some more volumes of? You guys told us. So tonight, we're getting caught up and hitting one of those series, and that's going to be Infinite Dendrogram. We're going to be covering volumes 4, 5, 6, and 7 of that series. Volumes 4 and 5 were covered in the anime, so if you've seen the anime, there should be no spoilers for you for those two volumes. However, 6 and 7 were not covered by the anime, and we're going to be talking spoilers, so if you don't like them, don't like spoilers, that is, well, you know what to do. Okay, now, there honestly hasn't been a ton of news, because we've been in the middle of summer, and everything happens at the beginning of summer, and then it's a drought until the end. However, just in the past couple of days, there's been a couple of announcements. First off, we had two light novels announced by J Novel Club at Otakuthon's virtual convention. The first one is called I'll Never Set Foot in That House Again. It's by Milligram with illustrations by Yuki Kana. Chelsea may be the eldest daughter of a baron, but her days are spent enduring both verbal and physical abuse from her mother and younger twin sister. However, upon skill appraisal on her 12th birthday, it's discovered that she has a never-before-seen skill, seed creation. Brought to the Royal Research Institute for the investigation of her new skill by the appraiser Glenn, Chelsea's life does a 180. A big room with personal maids, a warm, soft bed to sleep in, and delicious food to increase her mana pool. She's treated like a princess. But of course, her younger sister Margaret won't sit by quietly as Chelsea is pampered. I believe this one's a J Novel Heart title. Yeah, it's J Novel Heart. So, more of a shoujo, probably budding romance type series. Next up, they announced Fushi no Kami, Rebuilding Civilization Starts with a Village. This one is by Mizumi Amakawa with illustrations by Mai Ogumi. Ash is an 8-year-old boy with apparent past life memories who lives in a remote deserted village. As he remembers leading a bountiful life, he cannot bear living in a world akin to the Dark Ages, where not even the internal combustion engine exists. For that reason, he needs to consult books containing knowledge from a highly developed ancient culture that is said to have existed far in the past. This is only the beginning of a story about a young boy who sets out to revolutionize the world in order to rebuild civilization and achieve his ideal life. So, kingdom building? Light novel Sims?
Sounds a bit like Ascendance of a Bookworm on steroids.
Yeah, right? Like, it's like, it's not just good enough that I want to read books. Nah, hell no. I want the combustion engine. I want the internet.
Proper sanitation, yeah.
Well, I mean, I can't really blame him on proper sanitation, honestly, but, you know.
Dude, have you seen, like, how dirty some of the Dark Ages were? Like, I know, I think I read stories that, like, in London, they were literally throwing chamber pots out in the streets.
Bro, they still do that, no?
Like, dude, don't throw your shit out on the... don't throw your shit where everyone's walking.
That's why nobody wants to swim in the Thames, anyway. Okay.
Yeah, isn't the Thames, like, so fucking polluted that, like, it's, like, poisonous?
I think they've cleaned it up a bit, but it used to be pretty horrid, I believe. So, anyway, that's a whole different podcast. next up, Seven Seas is just in the middle of an event right now where they're announcing a couple of licenses. So we've got the first two light novels that they've announced. The first one is from the author of I Want to Eat Your Pancreas. Not too shocking, seeing as how Seven Seas has a number of their books. This one's called I Have a Secret. Five high school classmates hold secrets close to their hearts, hidden talents, unspoken feelings, and buried pain. Will it take a sixth sense for them to navigate their lives? As they collide with each other on the path to growing up, they might just jostle some of those secrets free. This gentle and intriguing tale is perfect for fans of Yoru Sumino's other nuanced works, including I Want to Eat Your Pancreas, I Had That Same Dream Again, and At Night, I Become a Monster. It almost sounds a little bit like Kokoro Connect to me.
Yeah.
Just that little bit of,
yes,
like...
Yes, I also thought about this at the beginning, but probably not...
Oh, no, I don't think it really is Kokoro Connect, but I'm just saying, like, you know, when you're reading it, it's like they have secrets and it's like a sixth sense or some kind of supernatural thing might start shaking those secrets free. And I'm like, whoa.
In the group of students, it's like mixed gender.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just think that Kokoro Connect is, it has a different tone than what I expect from that author.
Oh, I bet. Oh, I don't disagree at all. I just, like I said, just the gist of it kind of just reminded me a little bit of the gist of Kokoro, but anyway, yeah. It's all good. And then the other one that Seven Seas actually just announced today, as we're recording this, is Drugstore in Another World, The Slow Life of a Cheat Pharmacist. Corporate drone Reiji has transported to a fantasy world where he discovers that he can craft potions at a higher level than his rank should allow. Taking advantage of this, Reiji makes a tidy profit, enough to open his own drugstore. An elf who can't aim his bow? Give him some eye drops. A dragon who accidentally breathes fire? Cough syrup. Reiji's new, relaxing life of making medicine for fantasy creatures is about to begin. So, we've had quite a few, like, potion-type stories.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like, I think the outbreak of COVID has, like, gotten people interested in medicine.
Yeah, I think that was that trend preceded COVID. I would have liked Pharmacist's Monologue instead of this one. I had never heard of this one before.
Yeah,
yeah, I was kind of...
I've never seen this either, and it looks like... Add a little bit more of like a Lolly kind of focus on it.
Wow, the cute cat girl, you mean, that's on the cover?
Yeah. Mm.
Yeah. I don't know.
This one, my first association was Killing Slimes for 300 years, minus the OP-ness of the main character. But we don't know. Maybe he is also OP. But,
well, I mean, like, the whole like opening a store thing, right? Like, there's... we have the new one actually that just came out today from Seven Seas. The Saint's Power is Omnipotent. Of course, I Shall Survive using potions from Funa. Then there's the new one that's coming out from Yen Press in September. That one, what was it? Banished from the Heroes Party, I Shall Live a Quiet Country Life. And I think that's the same thing. He opens up like a kind of like a pharmacy or something like that in that
one. Then there's The Alchemist Who Survived Dreams of a Quiet Town Life.
Right. Yep. Okay. Yeah. That's another one. Yep. Absolutely.
Apothecary Diaries, which was the Pharmacist Monologue. Square Enix got the manga.
Hmm. Right. It was kind of funny though, because like when they announced this one, they're like, next we've got a title. Oh, and they also got the manga for this one as well. I'll mention that. But it was kind of funny because they were like, we know this title is going to make a lot of you happy. And when I saw it, I was like, I don't even know what this title is.
Yeah, apparently people do, but yeah, I hadn't heard of this one.
Yeah, I kind of felt like, you know, sometimes that's the thing, you know, you're like, sometimes you think to yourself, you're like, oh, I know a lot about light novels. And then you see these companies, they're like, so many people have asked us for this. We know it's going to make a ton of you happy. And they trot out this title and you're like,
it's probably Japan.
You're like, I have no effing idea what title that is. I've never heard of it before. You know, and like... And you can all, and it's always funny too, because especially Seven Seas, because they announce like almost all their stuff on Twitter, right? And they always do like a tease where it's like they'll announce like, okay, we got another title, and then they'll wait 5 minutes, and then it'll be like, this title, I know a lot of people have been asking for, wait another 5 minutes, and then they're, you know, like, But, like, it's always funny to see everybody that's like, this title's been highly asked for, and all you see is, Data Live! Data Live! Just always makes me laugh. Bofuri. It's just kind of funny. Oh, yeah, Bofuri. Yeah, Bofuri is the new one. It was Data Live for the long... It was Data Live and High School DxD for the longest time. Then Yen got DxD, so then it was just Data Live, and now it's Data Live and Bofuri are the two that everybody screams about.
I'm still waiting for Data Live and Bofuri, by the way.
You just had to throw that in there, eh? You and everybody else, Bio. You and everybody else. Although I must admit, I am kind of I like Data Live. I could, you know, I don't know enough about it to say whether I'm passionate about wanting to read it or not. But the little clips I saw of the Bofuri anime made me think, you know, that's kind of my speed. I like those, you know.
She became like the ultimate tank and terrified fucking everyone.
Yeah, I like that. I like that one. Like, you know, I've been really, I gotta admit, like, I've been really enjoying the more like female main character, dungeon diving, like that kind of stuff. Like, you know, reincarnated as a sword, mm-hmm. like with Fran, you know, Tear Moon Empire, which I know isn't dungeon diving, but it's a female character, Deathbound Duke's Daughter. I finished Kuma Bear.
Oh no.
Is that good?
Well, you'll have to wait for my review. No, I'm just okay. Stay tuned to my YouTube channel for the review. You know what, man? Like, it was kind of like Killing Slimes a little bit, in that it was just like so chill and there was like really no reason to, and I mean, really, it's all kind of the same stuff. You know what I mean? Like, cute girl walks into the Adventurers Guild. All the rough, tough adventurers are like, you shouldn't be here, little girl. Little girl kicks their ass, and then everybody now lives in fear of her. You know, like, it has all the same stuff. It's just that she wears a bear suit.
Happens all the time.
It's just that she wears a bear suit, you know?
As gimmicks go, that might not be enough to carry the story.
Well, I mean, the only thing that's sort of, well, okay, like the only thing that's slightly, and I mean, this is like a fraction of a percentage difference, is that all of her OP-ness is in the actual suit. Mm. Like, she herself is weak as hell. Like, she cannot do a damn thing without the actual suit. So I don't think that I don't get the feeling that the book is ever going to get serious enough that, like, you know, someone will steal the suit and she'll have to figure it out without it. But yeah, it's the only thing that makes it
a little
different.
It is a very cute suit. Like, it's a very cute bear suit. Like, someone will want it.
Like, it's, oh, come on. It is just like a really fluffy, cute kind of series. That's what it's all about, you know? I don't think that, but yeah, it's definitely not, I wouldn't say it was like overtly original. I think it's just a whole bunch of super cute girls doing killing monsters and being cute, like, but I mean, you know what though, like, I'll say, I mean, again, it's one of those chill light novels, you know? It's like, if you just want to relax and read something that just kind of you can check out for a couple of hours, it's not bad, you know? Although I personally thought, and I mean, this kind of might sound funny, I personally thought Reincarnated as a Sword was better, but I think that's because I liked Fran as a character, because she was that quiet, strong type, and I mean, even though it did that same thing, you know, cute girl walks in, adventurers give her a hard time, she was so ruthless. Like, she was like next level, like cutting off limbs. I was like, you know, I was like, oh, she's just gonna beat them up. No, it was like a level of brutality that I'm laughing now, and I was laughing when I was reading it, because I was like, damn, girl. So, you know, like, there's ways to still do those kind of tropes, but make them stand out. Anyway.
Holy shit, that sounds metal as fuck.
Well, I mean, have you not read Reincarnated as a Sword? I'm kind of surprised by that.
Not yet. I've been busy with other stuff.
Mm.
Personally, I didn't like that aspect of Fran's character that much.
Really?
It was a bit too much.
Oh, I thought, I don't know, man. There was something about, like, I think it was because it was, like, that dichotomy of, like, we're so used to seeing, you know, the cute girl be a cute girl, and for her to actually kind of be like, tell the sword, like, yeah, I tried to murder the guys who had me as a slave, but, you know, and then like these guys get in her face and she like cuts their legs off. I'm kind of like, you know, I don't know. I was a little bit different.
It's a bit, it's okay when she does it to people who are actually evil, but Fran has a tendency to beat up people who are just mildly annoying and
well, okay, maybe she needs to learn her limits. I've only read the first book, so I don't, you know, I can't speak to her character going forward. Anyway, so yeah, so those are the four books that we've currently had announced. And we were just saying before we started recording, there is Crunchyroll's doing a virtual con early September that I know Yen On, well, Yen Press is going to be at. So they're going to probably have a couple of announcements come out of that. So we'll have a couple more light novels announced in the next coming weeks that we'll probably talk about. We'll see what they turn out to be. All right, so Infinite Dendrogram. So we have really kind of two distinct stories happening in these four volumes. The first one we refer to as Franklin's Game, which of course is the Franklin from the Dreyf Imperium taking over the Gideon and basically holding it hostage, and our masters fighting a desperate battle to try and save the city. And then we have the second one, which I don't know, what do you guys, is there even a name for that arc? The Lunar Society or the Shield of Miracles? Or
that's the title of the two books, of the two volumes. I wouldn't say it's one arc. The volume 6 is more or less introducing the character of Tsukuyo, yeah, and her henchmen, both in real life and in the game. And the end of the last chapter is more or less the introduction to volume 7. It's bit weird.
I kind of see that they're connected, but I guess maybe I just see them as being connected just because there's no way you can really get anything out of volume 7 without having read volume 6. And yeah, you're right, Mirage, like volume 6 does kind of set up things with volume 7. I guess that's why I kind of see them as being a bit connected, because you really can't have the events happen in volume 7 without volume 6.
I just browsed through volume 6 in preparation for this recording, and I was, in retrospect, I was surprised how little actually happens in this book.
Oh yeah, this book is, yeah, it's kind of rough. Like, the two villains in this book are both kind of idiots, and but they're also just like horrible human beings to an extent. And now, of course, you do find out, you know, a little bit more about Tsukuyo, which makes you feel a little bit better in 7, but yeah, particularly...
Yeah, Tsukuyo is...
She's correct.
Very interesting, let's say the least.
Well, yeah. Yeah, she is.
And the other character is Rosa. We'll get to her later.
Well, she's volume 7 is Rosa.
You mean B3? Are you talking about B3?
No, Rosa is the K&R. She's the second-in-command of the K&R PK group. Remember, she's the one that's...
Dude, can I just say I love B3? She's just great.
Like, yeah. And yeah.
She just shows up and she's like, bruh.
All right, well, maybe we should start with Franklin's Game first, seeing as though that happens first. I kind of get the feeling like 6 and 7, I think we're going to spend most of the time just talking about the actual characters, because... It isn't like super plot heavy, let's be honest. I mean,
no.
Mostly
it's more like set up for more plot. Yeah. Like, this is kind of like it's like there is relevant things that happen, but it isn't like super heavy plot.
Oh, no.
It's like
it's like a
filler arc in like One Piece.
Yeah, it's like a Bleach original anime arc, yeah.
Like, shit happens in it, but it isn't really, like, that important.
Well, I mean, you know, yeah.
Yeah, really setting up plot starts happening in volume 8.
Well, that's why we didn't get to 8, because we were like, if we get to 8, then we need to cover beyond 8, so... And, you know, chunking 4 books at one time is probably enough. So, let's get to Franklin's Game. Let's start there, because, obviously, a lot of... you know, if people have watched the anime of this one, then they'll at least have sort of a good idea of what happens in Franklin's game because the anime covered it. I haven't had a chance to watch the anime, so I don't know how much they butchered out of it. You know, anime has a tendency to do that, but yeah. So obviously this, you know, Franklin's game kind of becomes, it's sort of like the same things, like you have books 1, 2, and 3 kind of do the whole thing about introducing the world and introducing a bunch of characters. And then you have Franklin's game 5 and 6, where it's like the payoff of all of that, because all those characters that we've been introduced to really become super important in a huge event. Right. So, you know, of course the whole idea, is that the Altar Kingdom is at war with the Dreyf Imperium. Well, not actually at war currently, but
it's kind of like a Cold War situation. Yeah. Like there is hostilities, but they had a war.
Yes.
And the countries are like, this is like a cool down period, but it isn't going to last.
Yeah, and it's clear that Franklin's steps here are basically to try and basically crush the Altar Kingdom without having to actually do a quote-unquote war, right? It's the whole idea of if we crush their spirit and crush their infrastructure, then, you know, they're useless. We'll just be able to walk in and take over.
Yeah, pretty much, because, like, even though the Kingdom of Altar is in a bad position at the moment, a conflict will be a prolonged conflict, because even though the Kingdom of Altar has, even though they've lost a bit of infrastructure, they still have an army, they still have, like, leadership.
Yep.
And they do have masters that are now dedicating themselves to the cause when it comes to round two. So if they do go to blows...
Did we ever find out why Shu refused to take part
war? He wasn't in the game at the time.
Oh, was he not there? Like he had to log out for a while? Is that what happened?
I don't think it's explicitly stated. But if I remember it correctly, he just wasn't there for real world reasons or something like that.
Okay. Well,
which is very interesting, because that guy basically doesn't leave his house.
Well, that's the weird thing, and that's the thing. Like, that's,
he's a no lifer.
Well,
how do you kill what has no life?
Well, I mean, the other thing is, I kind of get the impression that Shu just seems to do his own thing, right? And I mean, you even get the impression in this one. So, of course, no big shock that Shu is the king of destruction. I mean, we've pretty much known that.
That's not even a spoiler.
Yeah, well, that's not even a it's not even a spoiler. Like, come on, who else was he going to turn out to be? You know, especially when
he's been playing the game since the game came out. Oh, is he anyone big? Probably.
Well, I mean, you know, when he's using basically a Gatling gun as his embryo's second form or something like that in the first volume, you know that Shu's probably stupid powerful. Like, there's no, yeah.
Well, there's also the hint of when he is battling the Jiangshi guy. Like, he just stood there, no fucks given. Like, no fucks. Like, stood right in front of this guy. Well, actually a girl. It's actually a girl. But stood in front of her, no fucks given.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, this is it. And, well, and it's, I think it's funny, because even the, even in the afterword, when they're doing, the characters talking, in the afterword, they're like, she was like, it's my big reveal. And they're like, dude, nobody's surprised. Come on.
No.
So even the author knew, even the author was obvious, but anyway, still, I was going to say though, you kind of get the impression, I get the impression with Shu that he doesn't really give a crap about a lot of stuff except his brother.
But he does care about Tians. So
yes,
he's always often shown to protect Tians. So I don't think if he had a choice, he would have refused to participate in that battle.
Well, and that's what I couldn't figure out. Because like in this one, they basically suggest, in 4 and 5, they basically say he gets involved in Franklin's game mainly because Franklin messed with Ray. And Marie says that the reason he blew the shit out of that forest to take her out was because she had killed Ray. So they kind of imply that Shu's main thing for getting involved in big scale stuff seems to be Rey, but at the same time, you're right. Like, the way that he acts with teens...
They say that he will always get involved if someone picks on Rey, but that doesn't mean he never gets involved for any other reason.
Oh, I agree. And that's why I wondered if I had maybe missed something there, because I was like... I was like, I can't remember.
It seems like there's a reason. Like, I think there has been a reason why he pulled out. Like, I don't think it's anything like, it had to be something big for him to, like, not the pull out of the battle.
Yeah, like, it isn't like Tsukio, who was basically like, I'll only help you if you give in to my demands, which we'll talk about later, but.
Yes, give me more influence.
And later he also helps, I think, Rook. With his pain training. It's more to, you know, advance him to a new stage of, like, embryo. But, yeah, so he does do some things that aren't just... I mean, ostensibly it's because he's Rey's friend, but for other people.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I don't get the impression that Shu is, like, a jerk. Mm-hmm. Like that, you know. And maybe it's because he's always got kids hanging off of him and he actually seems to be okay with it. Like, you know, but
I think the reason why he's helping out Rook is because maybe he is good friends with his brother, because I've got a younger brother now. Granted, his friends are like way under my age range, but, you know, I'm probably gonna think a bit more highly of them. It's just like, oh yeah, I know this guy, this is my younger brother's friend. So maybe it's like that. So it's like, hey, this is my friend of my younger brother, he's taking good care of my buddy, I'll help this guy out. Like, I think it might be something like that.
Hmm. Well, his motivations, like I said, they're kind of left a little up in the air, because he actually says that to Franklin. He's like, the biggest mistake you made was messing with my brother. Like, I kind of expected him to say something like, the biggest mistake you made was leaving me and Gideon, but I was like, nope, it's because he's pissed off because he was mean to his brother. But that's, you know, I think that's one of the things that I like about... I like about Dendrogram that you particularly see in these four books a lot more than in the first three is that inclusion of the outside world, talking about, like, you know, we get a lot more insight in four and five. Like, we get to see Rook's backstory. We get to see, like, Hugo's backstory.
I liked actually Hugo's backstory. And also her connection with Dr. Franklin. I didn't expect that. Like, I actually, like, when I was reading this book, like, when I was reading the book, I was like, wait, they're related? Oh, I didn't know that. Like, I didn't expect that. That was actually, like, cool. I like that. I didn't expect that.
I remember being pretty blindsided by the fact, I mean, spoilers, that they were both girls. You know, I was pretty shocked.
I don't know that I was, like, as surprised with Hugo.
I don't think the fact that they were girls that shocked me. I don't think the fact that they were girls shocked me in the slightest. Because, like, there are literally people who play online games and play as, like, the opposite gender. Mm-hmm. Like, I've literally done it for some characters I've played on games just for the shits and giggles. Like, you know what? Hey, what? I want to play as, like, a beautiful woman who blows shit up. Like, fuck it. You know, for shits and gigs. Yeah. All right? That didn't shock me. It was the fact that they were related shocked me. I'm like, wait, these guys are related? Okay.
I did also, I don't know, I thought, like, the ultimate, like, the thing that got, Franklin, the thing that got Franklin to leave the family, obviously it was more than just that one thing. But that being, like, what blew it over the top, I thought that was a little much. It was, like, destroying the, like, paper crafts of her grandfather or something like that.
Well,
like,
I think...
That, yeah.
But I think it was a culmination, right? Like, that was just the straw.
Oh, yeah. That was the final straw.
Well, because that's the whole thing is, like... Because Hugo talks about how her sister... had an arranged marriage, right? That they were going to marry her off to, like, some rich dude or whatever. Like, they had set up a marriage for her, and that part of her leaving was because of that. I think it was more like, because you, like, and this is kind of the interesting thing, like, and again this is, like, what I really like about Dendrogram is that kind of it gets a lot more into the idea of role playing as opposed to a lot of other VR MMO books where people are just themselves. You know what I mean? Like when you read Sword Art, like Kirito is Kirito, Asuna is Asuna.
But
you know,
in these games, they are mostly or rarely playing. They are mostly fighting for their survival, and there's hardly any leeway for role playing in such a situation.
Well, but that I mean, even like later, but later on, I mean, okay, admittedly, I'm not saying that there's no justification story-wise. I'm just saying most of the VR MMOs that we have, characters aren't really role-playing that we see as much, you know? I would say certainly, I would say maybe Excel World, you get a bit of that. You get a bit, we're actually going to talk about Excel World next, so we won't get too deep into that. We won't get too deep into that, but.
But there's something about Dendrogram. There are people in Dendrogram who are role-playing, and there's some people who are not role-playing. And yeah. I think the distinction of one distinction is that the people who are not taking the world seriously, are not taking the teens to be real people like Franklin, they have the leeway to role play. The people who respect and teens and want to protect them and fight for keeps, they have no leeway to role play. Ray does not role play.
Can I ask, does he not believe, like, he doesn't believe that there's some real aspect to this game? Like,
I don't think he ever says it right out. What he does say, if I recall correctly, is that even if it were the real world, he would do the same thing.
Yeah.
Yes.
But
yes,
he doesn't
that was
say,
crazy.
But he doesn't quite say that he believes that this world is real.
But I will disagree a little bit, because I mean the character of Hugo, obviously she's playing a role, and even she said, and even though she's maybe doing
Hugo
a lousy job of it,
she
does have a definite ideal of what she wants to be and the character that she wants to play.
Yeah, she wants to be this romantic, you know, gentleman
and the knight right? Like a knight that is noble and everything else. And so
French knight.
Yeah. Oh yeah, absolutely. And so she is role playing, but
the courts of love.
Yeah, but she but she believes that Dendrogram is more than just a game, because she's also a maiden master, right?
Yeah.
So I think Dendrogram does a really good job of kind of balancing out this concept of characters who see the world as a real world and characters who see the world as a just completely false game world.
Yeah.
And then there's all the people that are in between, right? The people like,
because
I mean, let's face it, even in our world where we know the game is entirely false, people will still play a game with the same sort of moral set that they themselves have if they're given that choice. You know what I mean? Like,
I think Hugo maybe also kind of tried to, like, because Hugo thought, you know, teens are real. Of course, my sister must think that too. So that could be another argument that Hugo just put, like, her own ideals onto her sister, because she just imagined that. Yeah, of course she would think that, because that's what I think.
Yeah. Well, I think there was, like, there's definitely an ideal, an idealization between them, right? That Hugo idolizes, in a way, her sister. And so she's kind of like, my sister couldn't be that evil. And, I mean, that was one of those things, like, at the end of the whole Franklin's game, where Franklin basically fires Hugo and says, you know, I'm doing it for your sake. You need to explore the world and not be tied into my stupid schemes and everything else. But Franklin's also like, I need you to go because I can't be as crazy and evil as I want to be. Because I will keep limiting myself because I don't want to completely ruin your impression of me, right?
Yeah.
So I think that's kind of like it kind of like when I was reading the book, I mean, you know, like the whole Franklin's game thing. I mean, it's very much like a shonen battle series thing, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I mean,
it's like evil bad guy that just wants to cause chaos for the sake of chaos. He's got his minions and they're gonna fight it out.
Yeah, and it's like your low levels that shouldn't be able to do anything manage to do stuff because they're smarter and more versatile and won't give up.
No. It's not neither smarter nor more versatile. It's having exactly the same the one skill that will help you at exactly the right moment.
Well, okay, yes, okay, but you have to admit, like, the way
over
they set up...
and over again.
Oh yeah, but you have to admit though, like, the way they set up Rook in particular, like, he's supposed to be like smarter.
Yeah,
like there's no, you know, like that's part of his superpower, if you want, is like he's supposed to be just smart, so smart that he can actually like almost mind read people.
He's so smart that his last name is Holmes.
Yeah, Jesus. Like, you know,
listen, those Holmes genes are very, very potent, okay? Like, it just gives you like hyper intelligence.
Well, I mean, to be fair, he does state that it was his like great grandfather adopted the name, and even though it was a fictional character, because his great grandfather was a detective and thought so highly of the Holmes character, he decided to use the name. So they do acknowledge that it's a fake, that they're not supposed to be the Holmes line. But I did, I kind of like, this is the one thing. Okay, so in particular, I would say for this 5 and 6, for books 4 and 5, as much as I love Dendro's kind of really playing with the whole idea of who's role-playing, who's playing as themselves, and all this kind of stuff. I have to admit that the backstories kind of took me out of the story a little bit. Like, how many of these people playing in this game have, like, these outrageous friggin' families that they all end up together? Like, Rook's whole thing is like...
It's almost like a form of plot convenience.
Right? Like, Rook, yeah. My father was the greatest detective in the world, and my mother was the greatest art thief. Like, what the... like, seriously?
And that's not let's not start about Ray's family.
Oh, God. Well...
Dude, his sister is terrifying.
I want to meet his sister, and we haven't yet in 6 or 7, so...
You know, it's funny. I hope that his sister comes up in the game, like, you know, this new fucking up and coming rookie, and then Ray realizes it's like it's his sister, the terrifying demon.
Well, I mean, that's like, I love that. I mean, you know, obviously it's a little bit. It's not Franklin's game. It's the next ones, but like that's where Shu's like, that's why you're afraid of Tsukio, because she's like your bloody sister. She's like your sister. I thought that was pretty funny, but yeah, no, I mean, exactly, like Ray's family is absolutely ludicrous. Well, okay, I don't know about his mom and dad. He makes it sound like his mom and dad are pretty average, but his brother and sister are like abnormal to the nth degree.
That does actually happen sometimes. Like, sometimes you'll have like these families that just are completely normal, but like they'll have children or like grandchildren who are just like geniuses, prodigies. Like that does happen. Now, obviously, it's a bit too extreme in this case, because yes, it is a light novel, but stuff like that does happen. Like, you'll just have these fucking super geniuses just show up.
So his brother owns like 3 high rises or something.
Yeah,
how did he get the money?
Oh, it was like he won a lottery. Yeah. So basically,
he was also a child actor and also a kick-ass martial artist. Like, this guy's prodigy.
Oh yeah,
prodigies.
He did have that.
And he's also a master chef too. Don't forget. Ray is like, his cooking apparently is next level too. Basically, whatever Shu wants to be good
Where's
at.
Where's the lamb sauce?
Like, whatever Shu wants to be great at, he basically is. Basically, what it makes it sound like...
This pork is so raw, it's singing Hakuna Matata.
Jesus. Basically, like, he says that because Shu was such a great martial artist, he traveled abroad and he bought a lottery ticket. I think they are quietly suggesting that he won like a US Powerball kind of thing. Because Ray is like, even once the conversion and the taxes and everything else were paid, it was an obscene amount of money that he then turned around and bought like 3 high rises and basically never has to work again. So which is why he's online all the time. So, yeah, I like, and again, like, that's where, and if, And I mean, even as ridiculous as Shu's story is, it is still realistic in comparison to Rey's sister. And I think still more realistic than Rook's backstory.
Yeah, the one thing I liked about Rook's backstory, and I at the time I read into it, I don't know if it's going to be true or not, but I think there was something to, like, Rook's father was investigating Infinite Dendrogram or something. So it almost feels like he's going to get at the heart of, like, some of the mystery surrounding, is this a game, is this the real world, who started this whole thing? It hasn't come to fruition yet, but that intrigues me.
Yeah.
But same here. Like, it's kind of like, this is the character who's going to dig behind, you know, the mysteries, and then he's going to suffer. He's going to find something out that he's not supposed to, and then he's going to suffer an unfortunate accident while jogging.
Well, I agree, though. You're right, Terrence. I mean, aside from the ridiculousness of his parents' background, I did...
Yeah, his lineage is like 1 in a billion, by the way.
Well, that's what I'm saying, right? Like, you know, both parents decide to train him as a master thief and a master detective because they don't want to limit him they don't want to compete with each other, and they're going to let him choose his own path. Yeah. But anyway, I agree with you, though, Terrence, that even if they had just gone with a more realistic, like his dad was just a detective and his mom was whatever, I think that was the one thing that I thought was kind of cool, was the idea that he didn't get into Dendrogram just because he was bored, or because it was because, like, with his parents not there anymore and not pushing him to learn new things and everything else, he was like, I don't really have a direction. Like, I've let my parents dictate my whole existence, so what the hell do I even want to do? And then he sees this game and he realizes that his dad was hired to investigate. And he's like, well, you know, maybe I can find some answers here.
I also think it makes sense from, like, what age he's in, because I think, let's be honest, when we reach, like, our 14s, 15s and 16s, it's sort of like where we start to branch out and find our own shit that we're into, you know, not just stuff that our parents, like, show us. Because, like, as a child, like, you'll have interests, but, like, your parents are going to be more like trying to, they'll either nurture those interests or they'll try and curve them. But when you get to that sort of age that Rook is at, you sort of have a bit more independence and you find stuff that you're more into. So I think it makes perfect sense why he'd feel a bit directionless without his parents there. And now he has got, like, a bit more independence. He's sort of like testing the waters, as they say.
Yeah, I'm still trying to figure out how exactly he ended up as a pimp when he's only like 15 or 16.
But listen, he's got that swagger, okay? It's the inherent, like, he's got the swagger genes. You know, he didn't choose the pimp life. The pimp life was bestowed upon him.
Oh, God. Well, it all,
he's got to put those hoes in place.
Like, it kind of seems that way, honestly, but...
Alice must have been sleeping on her drop.
Oh, man. Yeah.
Get back to work.
I think that's the one thing about Dendrogram that I like too, is that, and I mean, Marie brings this up in the earlier books that we talked about in the first podcast, how she's like a mangaka and that she's playing the game as her character to try and sort of live that life so that she can come up with ideas for her work. And I kind of like that idea about this book, that it takes gaming to an idea of you can kind of define yourself. If there was a game that existed like this, where you literally could do whatever you want, it really would give you the idea that you could kind of explore and figure some things out about yourself and everything else with that kind of freedom, you know, and without there being like consequences to the real world, right? Quote unquote real world. We still don't know if Dendrogram's a real world or not. They're kind of still teasing us with that, but
there are some pretty heavy implications. Yes,
I agree. Yes, there is definitely some
We're gonna get to that, because it's very spicy.
Well, yeah, well, I mean, they don't get into it in 6 or 7, so we're not going to get too much into that.
No, that's in 7, the one I'm talking about.
The one thing you're talking?
Same here, I think.
Which one? Me and the baby?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Ooh.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, well,
it's a boy.
Like, again, it's, yeah, that's definitely kind of a weird thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I never expected them to go there, but I think when we were talking on the last podcast, I think Bio might have mentioned that, like, that was a possibility, and I was like,
are they really going to go there?
And and then they went, like, further than I expected with, like, the zygote and everything.
Listen,
and
there's infinite possibilities. Yeah. It's infinite dendrogram.
Well, I mean, yeah, the whole, like, discussion about how, like, bodily fluids only last so long, and yeah. I was like, yeah, I agree. That did go pretty far. I was like, okay, so I guess I understand the author's kind of saying it's possible, but it's real hard to have happen.
Did you guys know that semen actually has, like, enough data to last, like, 4 gigs? Like, it has, like, 4 gigs worth of, like, actual genetic data?
That honestly doesn't surprise me, because I know they said there's a project currently happening where they're trying to use DNA as a writable, readable source. And they said something like one strand of DNA could basically hold the entire internet. There was like, it was like something ludicrous. Like it might have been like one or two strands, but they were basically like, yeah, like a box you could hold in your hand. If this works the way that it is, a box you could hold in your hand would be like the whole internet could be on that box. So yeah, it's pretty wild. Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, so yeah.
Like I'm just imagining the buffering time if you tried to fuck an infinite digigram. Like I'm just imagining everything like slowing down immensely because like this 4 gig download.
Well, can you imagine? Like this is the thing about infinite digigram, right? Like it would be impossible. Like I mean, aside from the whole VR making it seem like you're really there kind of thing, like you'd never be able to stream a game with that caliber of graphic. And can you imagine being in a VR MMO where you actually feel like you're living there and all of a sudden, like, you go to run down a hallway and all of a sudden you're frozen and you're stopping because it's loading the hallway? Like, can you imagine? You're like, God damn it, I'm going to die because I can't move.
Like, you're buffering and, like, everything's slow.
Yeah,
can you imagine? No, you have that really fucking, like, I think everyone here will remember, like, the fucking, like, the dial-up noise. I was like, burr, burr, burr. No, no, yep. No, 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 no. Yes. It's like, fuck, he's using dial-up.
We can hardly do a Discord recording without such problems.
Seriously, true story. Yeah, listeners, you have no idea how many ups and downs we had just getting ready for this recording tonight.
Yeah, like this podcast nearly died like several times. Like it's on life support.
Yeah, like
clear.
But getting back to the children stuff. Do you think Hugo could father children in this world?
Like what? Like, I mean, yes. I mean, okay, well, it depends what you're talking about. I mean, from what we have been told, every single master... Okay, well, we don't know about women. But, I mean, I got to imagine it would be basically the same idea. Although, how could a woman stay logged in for 9 months? I don't know if that would ever work. But
I don't think they
Hugo is not a woman in the game.
What's that?
Yeah.
Oh, Hugo's... Yeah, but Hugo's a girl in real life. But I don't think it matters. I think it's only your avatar that matters. I don't think it matters what you are in real life. That's what I think. Again, I don't know.
Infinite Dendrogram is a way for females to become a father.
You could. Yeah. Or for men to become mothers.
That has to be such a weird fucking thing.
Like, I mean, you could actually have a man and woman have a child and the man is a woman in our world and the woman is a man in our world. That could technically happen.
One thing I was thinking about was if when Shijima, we'll get to him in a little bit, but like one idea I had about why he was logged out was he maybe had another wife or something that he was trying to explain.
Oh, no.
You know, like that could happen. You could have two families.
You could. You're not wrong. And like, seriously, with it going 3 times the speed, I mean, you could spend like 6 hours with your wife and it would only be 2 hours our time. You know what I mean? Like, you kiss your wife goodnight. See you later, honey. I'm just going to play for 2 hours. Yeah.
Just Boing. Hope she never logs in with your account.
Right? I'm sure there must be a way that it doesn't allow you to give
it. I don't think that's possible, yes.
No, I don't think so. Given how customized it is.
So it's probably not possible, yeah.
No. Anyway, but yeah. You know what? Let's just get into 6 and 7, because you know what? Like, Franklin's game, I mean, other than the backstories that I think that are revealed, and, you know, the idea that Franklin is actually a woman, that surprised me. I actually thought...
Also, like, Ray gets his, like, nickname, like, Unbreakable.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And then becomes a pirate.
Yep.
I love how, like, okay, I know that you're up-to-date bio, basically, but... I don't want you to ruin it for me, but at the same time, I'm kind of like, I really wish that Ray would just embrace the Dark Knight. You know what I mean? Like,
he kind of like basically like no spoilers, but like his armor and powers become edgier and edgier as the series continues.
Well, like, seriously, like, and I mean, it's a running joke. It's a gag. Like,
someone called him a Death Knight at one point.
I see that happening. Like,
no, there's like a video, there's videos of him now, like, circling the, like, he's becoming famous.
Oh, God.
And one of the tags is Death Knight, the Dark Knight.
Oh, God.
Yeah. The Knight of Despair.
I feel like Ray, and I assume this is going to happen, I feel like Ray is basically a recruitment tool now for the kingdom. Like, I think people are going to log into Dendrogram and they're going to be like, I want to go to, what is it, Altar? I want to go to Altar to, be on Ray's team or whatever, that awesome player. Yeah.
Ray. No, I'm just imagining Ray, like, riding up and, like, everything, like, the temperature just drops, like, all suddenly. And he's riding on this horse with this big, dark armor. He's got, like, this aura of fear that goes for miles. And, like, Ghosts of the Damned are shrieking.
Like, at the end of the main story in Volume 7, he literally gets a coat that's, like, swallow the light or whatever the hell. Like absorb light.
And he raises up his vengeance sword. Right. And if he sees you wanting, he strikes.
Like.
And leaves. Well, women
and are. I just.
But
and
his
I
His strike is just, you know, tapping you on the head with his sword. You know, he doesn't even have to thrust it.
Right. Yeah. He just has to touch you. That's what I love. Like, when they got into that more specifically in 6 and 7, right? They're like, yeah, I don't even have to actually, like, pierce or anything. It just, as long as I hit you with it anywhere, it doesn't matter. I could tap your arm and it'll do 200 times the damage or whatever. Like, oh my God, it's so funny.
Well, I think in the next volume, like, I think the volume after 12, he starts his own clan.
Oh, Lord.
And you know what the name is? Guess what the name is? It's funny as shit.
I can't even.
Death period.
What? Death period?
Yes.
That's just, no, please, no.
I thought it was going to be Vengeance is Ours.
That would have been good. I think that would have been better. That would have been really
better.
No,
it could have been Vengeance are Us.
Vengeance are Us.
We are Vengeance.
Oh my God, it's like the new Batman trailer. I'm Vengeance.
Dude, Ray is Batman.
I know.
He's Vengeance. I'm Ray, Unbreakable.
I'm Unbreakable. Oh God.
Like a condom.
Oh no. Those are very breakable. Anyway, moving on. But yeah, so 6 and 7. So, because like Franklin's game, I kind of felt like, the main thing about Franklin's game, the whole point of that whole arc was to give us more insight on some of the back characters. Like I said, we got Rook's backstory as to his real world backstory. He learned more about Hugo's backstory. We learned about the relationship between Hugo Franklin. We learned a bit about Franklin, about why Franklin has gotten to the point of, like, it seems like Franklin is so angry about people trying to take away her power in our world that she is just, like, bloodthirsty for power in this world. Like, that seems to be my thing. Like, I think she's just so damaged in terms of, like, and I think that's kind of the reason why her dad breaking up all of those, like, things and stuff. Like, I think that was why that was the final straw, was it because he broke something that was precious to her. and he was already trying to take away her life by promising her to marry another man and everything else, and taking, he was trying to take away more and more of herself. And finally, when he broke those, it was like, nope, if I stay here, I'm going to lose everything of who I am. And she bolted, which I can't blame her. And then she became Franklin in Dendrogram and was like, I'm going to own it all, and no one is ever going to beat me and put me down. And she's got issues. She's got issues. What did you think of the, what did you think of the whole reveal that she lives in Ray's building, though?
A bit too much of a coincidence.
I agree. I agree.
So we mentioned she said that thing about if I could do, you know, what I'm doing in the game, in the real world, I would. And like I was talking with somebody online, and they were like, well, she's lives in that apartment of shoes, so she must have the resources to be able to do pretty much whatever she'd want to do in the real world.
Well, that's true, because the apartment is not cheap. We're told that quite a bit, actually, in 6 and 7, when we get more of Ray's backstory. We learn a lot more about his sister and how crazy she is. He reveals that that's where we learn that Shu owns these buildings and that he won the lottery and that's how he bought them. Because we've wondered...
Pretty good investment.
Yeah, because we've wondered up until that point, like, how the hell does this guy stay online all the time without having to work? But, you know, where does he get all the money? Well, now we know. But yeah, okay.
I thought it was drugs, but I was really... he's like the Walter White of Japan. Like, saying, this is my county, bitch.
Jeez.
No, it'd be province. Yeah, it'd be province. So he'd be like, this is my province, bitch.
And that's how he makes his deals. He actually does it in Dendrogram, and that's how he can't get caught by the police.
I wouldn't trust buying popcorn from a suspicious looking bear like him.
Let alone your drugs. Oh God, can you imagine? Yeah. Try my cocaine; it's very good.
It's just said that these volumes were just setting up story. That's basically the theme for the whole series. It doesn't feel as if it has really started yet. I just finished reading volume 11, and it still feels as if they're setting up the story. They're still introducing new characters every volume, dropping out old characters, Barbaroi and Hugo and so on. They don't have much screen time beyond volume 7. It gives rise to a whole new cast of characters. So it's I have no idea how long this series will go on, because they do imply a lot of things about the past of the world, but there's nothing really happening in that direction.
Yeah, like, I've read up to 12 volumes. I don't see a fucking end in sight. Like, you know when you read a series where you can kind of tell that this series, you can kind of tell that you're at least at the halfway point. Like, even if you don't know the episode count, like, let's take just a standard anime. Like, you can kind of guess, like, because of, like, story structure and what's been going on, that, like, we're probably at the halfway point or, like a two-thirds for the show. But, like, for Infinite Dendrogram, I don't see an ending in sight. I mean, the biggest thing that I can see on the horizon is like this war between like Dryam and, you know, the kingdom. Like, that seems to be like something that's going to happen in the future. But I don't know beyond that. Like, I don't think the series is going to end like after that thing happens.
Yeah. Well, I think that's because they haven't really, like a lot of light novel series, even though they, of course, have individual arcs, there's usually at least one over sort of idea that arches over everything, right? Like, you know, You can have a series where, yeah, okay, let's say it's defeat the Demon Lord. That's your big story. But then you've got all the little arcs in between about how we have to get this armament and how we have to get this weapon and how we have to get this team member. And,
or some character's got some drama and yeah, we can go fix that.
Exactly.
You know, character development
so stuff. You've got all of those things, but because you know what the big idea is, you're kind of like, you can tell how close you're getting, right? It's like, oh, this arc just got us the sword that can kill the Demon Lord. Well, I guess we're getting close. You know, but there's
the
nothing
only
like
thing
that.
I've seen that might be an overarching goal. I'm not sure if that's been in Volume 7 or later. Is that the control AIs want to create 100 level 7 embryos?
That actually is introduced early. That's like back in Volume 2 or 3.
Yeah. It's getting picked up later, later again, but I wasn't sure where it was mentioned first.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
if that
I
is really
like...
the end game for the series, I'm not sure how many level sevens there are at this point of the story. Maybe 20.
There's not a lot, like because when they're talking in Franklin's game about the superior, that's the superiors, right?
Yeah.
They basically mention
superior masters.
Yeah, like they mention like what, 7. I think in Franklin's game?
I think the central country, Kaldina, has 9.
Okay.
And then Altair and Rüfer both
have like
3.
3, yeah.
Yeah, and let's say 3 is the average for the countries, then you get 2.
I think Tenshi, I think the Japanese style one, I think they have 5 to 4.
Hmm.
I think they mentioned it somewhere,
so
they have like a superior.
Let's
or
be
two.
Generous and
like
say it's 30 in total. So they have still 70 to go.
Oh God. I mean, the only thing that I can think of, like you're right. They did mention that,
that raises the question, why they need 100 of these guys? Like one is already like a demigod. So why would you need 100 of these?
Yeah, well, that's the one of the big questions that is open for now and probably for a long time to come, because so far I think we have seen only 3 of the controller AIs.
Mm. Not a lot of them, that's right.
Cheshire, Jabberwock was there in the anime, and there was a short scene with Humpty Dumpty.
Yeah.
But I think that was in beyond Volume 7. Oh, and I think Caterpillar was mentioned in Volume 4, I think, or 3 or 4.
Yeah, like, I'm hoping that they get to the heart of, like, why some characters get these super awesome skills and then other characters get stuck with crap. Like, one of the characters mentions that in, I think, in 7, one of the player killers, he's like, and of course, it turns out not to be true for this particular character.
Right, yeah.
He had, like, an extra skill that he unlocked nobody knew about. But he was like, some players just get, you know, crap like this where they can write, you know, a new skill or a new name on a piece of armor. And then other people get, like, what Ray gets. Like, it definitely feels like the AI is manipulating things, and I don't really know. I think that should be at the heart of what the end goal is.
So
again,
the AI does not care about fairness at all.
No. Mm. No,
or
and
game
that's,
balance.
Well, and I think that is part of the... And maybe that's part of the reason why I like the series, is because it does seem like... Like it does really build in that idea that the possibilities are infinite, right? Because, as you said, like the nature of all the embryos are so vastly different. Some and the abilities that some of them gain as they get to their higher levels are so broken compared to any other game that you could ever play. Like Shu, like I have a mobile land fortress, basically. Like what? Like
he's got the battleship Yamato.
Yeah, right. Like it's like freaking Star Blazers and shit going on down here. Like what? Like I just.
What does Ray have? He has a big giant sword, a halberd, and the other thing that he gets in Volume 7,
the shield. Well, the shield that then turns into a shooting star or whatever that they.
Yeah, it's his third form is basically, it has two functions. It has like a defense, it has like two forms.
Yeah.
So his third, the third thing he gets has two forms. It has like a shield, like to take the hits, and then when it's charged up, it becomes like a pinwheel they can chuck at people.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
It's kind of a wonder that any Teans are still alive.
Yes.
Like, I used to play World of Warcraft for a long time, and when you go to a PvP server, basically most of the time all NPC settlements are dead. You have to wait 5 minutes for quest givers to respawn and hope that you can click them fast enough that you can get the quest before they get killed again. So if this were anything, and this is with guards that are as strong as the average player, so in a game like Infinite Dendrogram,
like even though he's like above he's above mm-hmm. average and like power level compared to like the average player, I mean, this guy could, like, he could wipe out entire fucking towns. Holy shit.
Yeah, and basically any superior can do that. Franklin could have wiped out any town in the country, except that he chose the one where so many superiors were gathering.
Well, and again, that was mainly because he thought that he had it locked down, and he thought that if he could defeat the town while the superiors were there, it would show that they were inferior, right?
But, yeah,
you know,
but
he didn't.
But if he didn't care about that, he could have gone on a rampage through the country.
Oh, yep, absolutely.
And I wonder why there are not more superiors doing that. When there are countries at war, that should be a prime tactic to win.
Well, because they don't. Well, they do have that whole thing with the gaol, right, or the goal, or however they pronounce it.
Yeah, but that doesn't matter if you are in a war. You just respawn in your home country and go back after 2 days.
Yeah, but you can't go back to that country, because if you die in that country, then you go to the.
If you die, and you only go to the gaol if you don't have any save points in any country.
Right. Oh, I thought it was like if your save
point
was only in the country.
You can respawn in your country, and if you're at war, if you're acting on behalf of another country. I think it's that way. Maybe I have it wrong.
No, I think you're right. I know it's something about the save points. I think it's if your save point, if you don't have a save point outside of the country where you are wanted, then you can go to the gaol. But if you have a save point outside of it, then you're okay, because you're only going to go to the jail if you spawn in the country where you're wanted. I think that's how it works.
So Franklin or any superior could go on a rampage until he's defeated by some kind of some other superior. And then wait 2 days and do it again. And after a few weeks of this, there wouldn't be any Teans left alive.
Yeah. Well, I kind of wonder if... Like, I kind of wonder if part of that... no, I mean, I don't know if they'll ever get into it. Addressing a character maybe that was like that. But I kind of get the opinion... The superiors that we have seen so far... I get the idea that they are superiors because they have spent a long time in this world. Like, they live in this world as much as they can. And it seems that they want to live in the world, which means they don't want to burn the world right to the ground, because then there really is no world to live
in. Yeah, it's that rule of, you know, don't shit where you eat.
Yeah, but there are superiors like that.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure there are. Yeah, there was that one guy.
Franklin is one counterexample we meet later on. I will not go into details for spoiler reasons, but there's another superior that we meet later on, and he's basically a spoiled kid, and he doesn't care about Teans at all.
Mm.
He also has no compunctions about killing them left or right.
Yeah, I think that they're, I mean, again, I think it's the game, if it is a game, balances out just because of, you still have masters that want to protect Tians. I think you're right. Like,
well, you have masters that are basically going to be annoyed that some guy is rampaging through their home and then just like, how dare you?
Yeah, like I think that that's probably why this whole thing is set up, that there's countries that you spawn into to try and build a bit of a sense of belonging to that country so that you may feel the desire to protect it and therefore protect the people.
Yeah, but as soon as a war breaks out, that would backfire.
Well, I see what you're saying, and I don't totally disagree. As you said, I mean, how many of us have played like MMORPGs where you walk into wherever and it's like, wow, somebody killed a lot of people here. You know, like, yeah. You know, I remember playing like GTA years ago when my son was just like a toddler, and I left the room for a second, then my wife starts laughing and I'm like, what happened? She's like, your son just picked up the controller, pulled out a katana like it was nothing, and just started chopping people down in the street. And I was like, oops, maybe not the game to play with my kid in the room. But anyway, but you know, like, yeah, like there's those games you can just do that.
They grow up so fast.
They really do. And actually what's funny is that one has no interest in video games at all now, but whatever. But yeah, you know,
he got traumatized by GTA. Yeah, he got traumatized,
that's right.
He won't grow up to be a gamer.
Nope. But you're right though. Like I think that there's definitely, when you see the level that the superiors are capable of, especially when you say, like you said, I mean, if you consider that there's maybe only 20 to 25 of them right now, and they want there to be 100 in the world, like that's like pretty massive alteration to the terrain. Like that's pretty crazy, honestly.
It is, and the length
anyone will survive 100 of these guys. Like,
and
I think,
the length they are going to create those 100 is pretty extreme as well. We have heard about the UBM that Shu Tsukuyo and Figaro defeated together. That three-headed dragon.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. It's not much of a spoiler. Volume 11 will be the long version of that story.
Oh, okay. That's not a spoiler.
I'm not going into details again, but it causes widespread destruction, and the control AIs do not care a shit. Okay, a few of them do, but some of them.
It becomes like an ends justify the means kind of thing. Mm. Like, they don't want it to happen, but they're like, this is the only way.
Yeah. I kind of wonder if, do you guys, have any of you read the manga of Gantz?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So I won't get into spoilers, but basically, like, it starts off where you think it's one thing, and then it kind of does a complete 180, and then you find out that basically it's like all this crap that these people have gone through up until this point was to prepare them for this one big end thing that goes on. That's about as vague as I can be. So I kind of...
accurate.
But yeah, it is. It's as accurate as possible. So I kind of wonder if, like, this is the thing. Like, we have this assumption that Infinite Dendrogram could possibly be a real world. But what if it's not? What if there is, though, a real world that needs these 100 superiors for a reason? And so they're using Dendrogram as a way to basically create those masters to then take them to that other world. Like, that's kind of where I think... I mean, that's kind
that
of my thing.
That would happen about in volume 53 or so. The control AIs, they do have an agenda. It is not explained yet, but starting in volume 8, you see a bit more of what is going on behind the scenes with the control AIs, who they are, where they come from, about the history of the world.
Okay.
And it's really interesting. I was a bit disappointed that we are only doing up to volume 7 today, because volume 8 would have a lot of stuff to talk about.
We'll have to do another one.
I mean, especially when we learn about Tomcat, like...
Well, okay,
Now you're getting into spoiler territory.
Yeah, let's not go into spoiler territory. So, but I mean, okay, so let's talk about, like, 6 and 7. So, 6 and 7 was, like, the first time that we really actually see multiple players outside of the game, right?
Ray's goes to Ray gets kidnapped by the Lunar Society. Figaro can bust some caps and basically helps him escape. Then he logs out and he meets the very same person who tried to kidnap him, but now in college and in real life.
Yes, and she's like what a third year, and he's a first year. Is that if I recall? Because B3 is a second year, right?
Yeah, she's trying to bully her kohai.
Yeah.
Remember we talked about coincidences earlier?
Oh yeah, this is a big one too.
I mean, it's not as big. I mean, a college is a big place and it has lots of gamers. So, and they were specifically advertising for people who play this specific game.
Yeah.
So it's kind of okay compared to living in the same apartment as Franklin.
Like the only thing that I thought about the whole Franklin thing was I was kind of like, does she know that it's Shu's apartment building?
She probably has no way of knowing that.
Like, that's what I think. Like, don't get me wrong, I think you're right, but I don't know. I just was kind of like, I wonder if the author is going to try and create a reason for her to be there beyond it just being a coincidence. But anyway, but yeah, you're right though. The whole college thing is a lot more believable. Also, I mean, this whole Lunar Society we're told is basically
the guy she
like,
was going to be married to.
What's that?
Shu is the guy she was going to be married to.
Oh fuck! That would be funny. That would be really funny.
Oh no!
That would be awesome. I'd really like that twist. That would be great. Can you imagine? Oh my god. Anyway,
and she's living at his apartment building and they meet up like again and it's like, oh shit.
but even better than that, when they find out who they are in game. That would be great. Okay, that's an aside.
I don't think the city of Tokyo will be standing afterwards.
No.
I hope the author is not listening to this.
I know, right? Seriously, we're going to give the author all sorts of ideas. But like,
if he is watching, ahoy gozaimasu.
I do think that the whole Ray does say like he's going to University of Tokyo, so it's like the premier university, and we do get the idea that this cult exists in the real world. And that's been around for many decades. So it's not that unreasonable that high-ranking members of it would be at a prestigious college as well, right? Like, that was where I kind of thought,
too. This is what cults do. Like, they infiltrate, like, this is what you do. You infiltrate these areas to get more followers. Yeah. So it makes complete sense.
Well,
that, you know, a couple of them would be in these colleges, because how are you supposed to get new members? Oh, you infiltrate. You know, you infiltrate.
But it's not even infiltration, because it's a known fact that they are, and that's why the club has no members, because people are like, it's creepy. We don't want to hang out with these Lunar Society people. Like, even BB...
Considering the Japanese history of cults, I'm not surprised, because they've had some fun ones.
Like, that's what B3 even says. She's like, yeah, basically nobody wants anything to do with this because of them, so she's like, I'm only in it because I want the info. I'm kind of sad to hear we don't hear much about B3 after 7, because I really like her.
Yeah.
We do.
A bit?
She shows up more.
Okay, well, I'm glad she shows up more.
She's a member of Deaf Period.
Okay. Oh my god, I'm never going to get over that. So yes, Bio did mention this back when we did our first recording about kids and them being able to have kids in Dendrogram. Now, embryos cannot have kids. I thought that was stated. I have to go back and remember. Mm. Like, it seems like masters can only have kids with teens.
I think so, yes.
Okay.
I don't think it's ever explicitly stated, but...
Yeah, let's hope so, because I don't want it to go that way. Anyway, so so we have one master who has managed to impregnate a Tian that he's married in the game.
Achievement unlocked.
God, can you imagine getting a trophy for that? Jesus. Actually, you do get a trophy for that in Skyrim, but you adopt the kid. You don't actually, like, have the kid. But anyway, that's a whole...
The game developers don't want more Dragonborn running around.
No kidding.
Those are the dragon blood, like Tidum Scepter. Like, just imagine Drogo, like, goo goo gaga, Fusradar!
I was just going to say, can you imagine your three-year-old, like, friggin' dragon shouting the house down? Anyway, although I will admit, I gave one of my daughters a dagger in Skyrim, and when I came home, she was, like, wailing on this practice dummy with that knife. I was like, damn, girl, like, you are vicious. Anyway, that's a total aside. but yeah, so they basically say, like, unless you're in this game for weeks on end, there's really no way that you can have a child, because the second you log out, every part of you, including your, you know, bodily fluids, disappear.
Yeah.
So unless you've been in long enough that the egg has been fertilized, there's no go. That's what they say. I did kind of wonder, though, if a girl master got pregnant in the game...
Yeah.
And then she logged out while she was still pregnant. Would she still be pregnant when she logged it back in?
I don't think we should touch that with a 5-foot pole, because that's a weird question.
That is a really weird question. I don't know. It's a very weird question. I don't know. I don't know. Yeah, you're probably right. That's probably not a place to go. Because it just brings up a whole bunch of weird ethical shit that, yeah. Anyway. But yes, so they can have but at least a male master, if they stay logged in long enough, could potentially have a child. And I think they say, don't they say that the kid in this one is like the, what do they say? Like, it's not the first time it's ever happened. I think they actually say that there's been, oh no, it's the marriages. They're like, it was like the 22nd marriage or something like that between a Tian and a master. Yeah. So that happens too, apparently. I've lost everybody.
No, I'm still here.
My jaw is like dropping to the ground.
Like,
although on the plus side, you can have your own like virtual waifu.
Well, I mean,
not virtual.
Like, again, this is where
it's real world.
It's one of those things that it brings up an idea that you could go ridiculously crazy ethics discussion on. But the book just kind of tiptoes around it, and carries on, you know? Like,
it's like this big giant bombshell that has, like, all these fucking questions, like the value of life and, like... Yeah.
Right?
Like, it raises all these questions, and I'm just like, I'm almost half tempted to write a paper about this, but, like, I'm already busy doing other shit, but it's like...
Like, it is weird, right? Like, I mean, this is one of those things where you... And again, like, infinite dendrogram, that is one of the things that, again, I like about the series. And it basically told us right at book one, this is a world of infinite possibilities where you can do basically whatever you want. And so now we've gone everywhere from, you know, take whatever quests you want, be a villain, be a hero, whatever. Now it's like...
Raise a family.
Yeah. Get married, raise a family, have an actual kid. Like, this is where, again, it's these kind of things that you start going to yourself, like, how can that be a video game? Like, how can this, you know what I mean? Like, I that's where I kind of wonder that's where I'm like, they're really blurring the lines between.
Yeah, by now, it's pretty, I'm pretty certain that it's not a video game.
No.
Like, I just don't see how it can be, right? I mean, it just, there's just too much freedom. There's too much possibility. There, you know, if...
There is too much prehistory.
That, yes, that's the other thing, exactly, because, like, in book seven, he goes to that whole, there's that festival, the Falling Star, Shooting Star, whatever festival, Wind Star Festival, and that's the whole thing. They're like, yeah, this is like a story that we've carried in a festival we've had for, like, 300 or 400 years because of this thing.
In volume eight, you get a glimpse at events that happened even farther back.
Wow. Now, I mean, admittedly, it's not like games can exist without backstory. I mean, you know, all sorts of RPGs have those kind of histories, but...
Yeah, but it's it talks about Tians that were alive back then, and some of them, I think, asked... basically, the control AIs were alive back then. There are. I just noticed there are some interesting parallels between this Infinite Dendrogram and Lock Horizon. In both stories you have adventurers, masters that are practically immortal and can always respawn when they die, and you have Tians / people of the land who do die if you kill them.
Right.
I wonder if there will be any relationships between people of the land and adventurers down the line in Lock Horizon. I wouldn't be surprised, but so far...
well, I mean, they started involving... Like, they brought
There are some pretty sweet moments between them, but no downright relationships, which is a bit surprising considering the situation there. But maybe the author just doesn't want to go there.
Well, I mean, it could be. But then, you know, the whole thing with Log Horizon, though, is that it still hasn't presented that the world they're in is a game. They've been brought into the world of the game. You know what I mean? Like, it's still more of an isekai than what this is. Like, this is still, it's supposed to be a game. I mean, even if we all suspect that it's not, there is still the ability for these characters to come in and out. Of the game,
both figuratively and literally.
God. Well, I mean, the author went there. What the hell?
And I'm going there.
Well, I mean, you know, but it just, again, like all of these stories, I feel. I mean, yes, it's all building Rey up. Obviously, I think I kind of feel. And again, this is just my feeling, but I kind of feel like we're not going to get the end game of what this story is about until Rey is a superior himself.
That goes without saying, I think.
Well, like, but I mean, I don't know if we're even going to get, like, I don't mean like that's where the series is going to start ending. I mean, like, I don't think we're even going to know what the bigger story is.
Yeah.
Until that happens. Like, I kind of feel like... I can imagine the author kind of having a couple of characters around Rey all getting to superior, like Rook and them, at the same time. And then they'll be like, oh, and by the way, there was like another 50 elsewhere in the world. So there's 100 now.
There might be a time skip somewhere. I'm not sure.
Maybe. I'll be interested to see how... Because in book 6 and 7, of course, Rey is just starting college, right?
Yes.
So it'll be interesting to me to see how the author, and I mean, I'm sure he must by the now that we're in 11 books, but how the author balances that whole demands of Rey's real life with the Dendro life.
Yeah, if he was like a no-lifer, he would be leveling up pretty quickly.
Yeah, like, I mean, he's still taking breaks from the game to do his thing and everything else, but I am curious to see that. I'm curious to see if the, now, I mean, maybe you can answer me this, it's not really a spoiler, but do we get a little bit more of that whole real world stuff going on in the book?
Yes.
Okay. You don't have to tell me any more than that. That was just my question. Because again, like, that's kind of what I like about Dendrogram, is that it's not just about...
Especially in, like, Volume 12. Especially Volume 12, because let's just say that sparks are flying, and I'm not saying about weapon sparks.
Okay. All right, fair enough.
Okay, yeah. Haven't read volume 12 yet, but until then, there's not really much in the real world from 8 to 11.
Okay. Well,
maybe a few side stories.
Well, that's okay. Like, I just, you know, it's not like I want to read half a book about Ray's day-to-day life, but, you know, I still liked that. I still liked that glimpse of him, like, going to college and, you know, meeting other players from Infinite Dendrogram. I kind of like seeing the whole, like, how people are in real life compared to how they are in the game.
Yeah, it's quite interesting. I think this is, oh yeah, and I think we should also mention that, like, Shu was going to rescue Ray, but he couldn't leave the city. Mm. And I think that's where we meet the Queen of Beasts or King of Beasts.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh yeah, that's in six. Yeah. I mean, we find out in five, we know that there are other superiors in Gideon that don't seem involved in the plan. And then, Shu continues to remain in the city in six because of at least one of them, which, is the beasts who stayed behind.
By the way, I think we see them this volume, but the actual maiden, the woman that you see, that's the embryo. The porcupine is actually the player.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, they're a maiden master.
Okay. I think that's a spoiler, but okay. But it's not a big spoiler. But that's pretty friggin' funny. Okay. Sure. All right. Well, that would make sense though. That would make sense given how she deferred to the porcupine so much. So
yeah, the porcupine's the actual player, and she and the woman, she is a maiden guardian type.
Funny. Well, and again, right? Like, that would make sense why it's the King of Beasts and the Queen of Beasts. Anyway, yeah.
Yeah, you really find out, like, that there's more crazy applications of, like, player character kind of things in these volumes in particular. Like, there's Rosa, who is, like...
A beast.
I forget. Like, is she, like...
She's, like, a wolf or something. Yeah.
And then there's the giants. Like, you can be a humongous giant if you want.
Yeah. Yeah. You don't have to be a human at all.
Mm-hmm.
Even though, like, basically everybody we've met up until this point has been. Which I think is kind of funny. I don't know whether that's, like, I can't remember when Ray was picking his character, whether that, like, they made much of that option that he could be a non-human, but I'm trying to remember that. You're right. Like, I mean, it feels like, well, I think this is what, like, Mirage and Bio are saying, because they've read further ahead, is that, you know, all these volumes, like, they're good, but again, like, they are all more just about adding layers to the world and building Ray's character up and advancing Ray's journey in Dendro
And the author loves just, like, leaving little hints at things that will come up later.
Oh yeah,
like there's like a newspaper article Ray reads really casually on the web, and it's like, earthquakes causing something something, which I think was something related to Black Sky. And then there was like a bunch of stuff on there. There was something about the player killer, and then there was something else that was a volume 3 thing.
Yeah,
or a volume 7 thing, you know. So, like,
yeah, he's, he loves, like, doing someone else's problem.
Yeah, he loves introducing, like, new stuff, and then sometimes they don't come back to it.
Yeah.
Like, sometimes it's just left hanging.
Like, I was really surprised that Hugo didn't show up in 6 or 7.
Yeah.
Like, I thought for sure, even if she didn't show up, like, as much in Ray's story, I thought there might be at least a little side thing going on. Because, you know, like, they made such a big deal of Hugo's character in books 3 and 4 and 5, and then... And 5...
From what I know, Hugo is not in that country. Like, in the desert country at the moment.
Well, I mean, again, like, I just kind of thought that the author might shift a little bit to tell stories about other characters, but
They do. We do get like a chapter dedicated to Hugo, like in the future.
Oh, okay.
And it seems like they may be building up where Ray and Hugo will meet up again.
At some point. Well,
like Marie didn't get like anything in 6 and 7 either, right? Like she was at the beginning of 6.
Yeah.
And then she just kind of, when Figaro decided to help Ray, she disappears to go do something. And then I don't think there was ever even a side story about it.
No, but I imagine maybe they cover it in another volume.
Yeah, but like I've kind of forgotten her. Like now B3 is the new hotness, you know? Like she's the B3. New player killer.
Yeah, same for Rook. Rook is also gone in 7. Yeah. And B3 will be gone in 8, and they all the supporting characters are more or less gone.
Oh yeah, a thing I really liked about the 6th volume was that conversation between Nemesis and the Maiden Master of Sukiyo.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Mm. About the whole thing about eventually masters leave, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that you should be honest with your feelings right away so at least you can move away on or at least build memories while they're around.
So do you think she'll confess soon based on the conversation? No, she's
talking about raising Sundray.
No, like I couldn't see that.
No, I don't want to kill your enemies for you, Baka.
Yeah. I couldn't see the series working as well with that if like I don't know. I that's one thing that I kind of don't want to see is the whole romantic thing with Ray and Nemesis. Kind of want them just to remain partners, kind of like what whatever his name was, Kijimi or whatever, you know, in Shijima. 6 and Kijima. Okay.
I think it's Shijima.
Okay. Between like him and he had like a maiden type embryo, but they were clearly not romantically linked because, you know, she just joined the family as part of the family kind of thing. So I kind of like, I like Ray and Nemesis's kind of relationship. I kind of like it's almost like brother-sister kind of thing. Mm. I prefer it to stay that way.
I never saw any danger of that changing.
Well, but I mean, they make it clear that Nemesis seems to think more of Ray than just as her master.
I haven't seen any of this. I haven't interpreted it this way.
I know that, like, she was talking to someone like in a future volume in a fucking bath. So
she gets jealous of B3 a few times in 6 and a little bit in 7.
Yeah, and then that discussion that she has with Sukiyo's maiden. Basically, the maiden is like, you know, you like him, and, you know, Nemesis does the very typical anime girl, no, I don't, but you clearly can tell that she does. I mean, it's heavily implied. Like, it's not like Nemesis has come right out and told someone, I'm madly in love with Ray. At least not by these books, and if she does later on, I don't want to know about it, because it's a spoiler. But, like, it's heavily implied. It's kind of like... Like, I find that this is the thing with Enneagram, right? Like, a lot of it is very heavily implied. Like, it's the same thing as the world, right? We all suspect that the world is not just a game. But definitely by the 7th book, the author has done nothing to really come right out and do anything that makes you sure. Mm-hmm. And so it's not even a situation of, like, the audience knows, but the players don't. None of us know. like we all just kind of suspect, right? But I do like that they even mention that the players themselves kind of suspect that too, right? That there are players that are kind of like, there's no way this is just a game. I like that aspect of it too, that there's certain times in the book where characters will say things that I'm thinking about the book as well, and I'm kind of like, oh, I appreciate that the author is thinking about the reader and going, they totally are thinking this right now.
Like, if I was playing this game, Like if I had a game like say Infinite Ninja Game was real and I was playing this, like, I'd be pretty fucking suspicious as well at some point.
Well, I mean, like, you like I said, you just have to sit there at one point and say to yourself, like, how can this be programmed? Like, you know what I mean? Like how can you create an AI so intelligent that you can populate a world with millions of individuals who just go about their day-to-day life? You know what I mean? Like, it's...
Yeah. And I do like that idea that you brought up earlier of, like, it could be, like, a training simulator or something for whatever the real Dendro is that's out there. I don't know. But I do like that kind of idea. Yeah.
Does anyone know in which volume they describe the jobs of the control AIs?
I don't remember.
Don't remember.
Is that before or after 7?
Well, they discuss the AIs a little bit in volumes 1 and 2. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're very throwaway little passages.
Maybe just it's not really I don't think it's a spoiler because I don't really know if it's true, but every one of the control AIs has their own job. Alice is responsible for avatars. Caterpillar is responsible for environmental management. Jabberwock is creating the UBMs and so on. I don't think there's any one of them responsible for creating Teans.
Mm.
There's one for creating embryos, one for managing items, one for events and quests.
No, you're right. No, they don't mention that. They don't mention that at all. Mm. So you're right.
Yeah, in terms of, like, the mysteries of the world or whatever, I was hoping that Black Sky would have a little more connection, especially where it's such an ancient thing. I don't think it really had... There wasn't as much of, like, this is gonna... You know, this thing is connected to the beginning of Dendro. You know, it just was a thing that existed.
Yeah. No, I know what you mean. They make it such a primal thing that it doesn't have much thought. So
And I loved it had a thought at the end and it gets cut off.
Yeah.
So what was even the point of that?
But since it is classified as a UBM, it has to have been created by by Jabberwock.
Hmm.
Because all UBMs have been created by Jabberwock.
Huh.
So does he just, like, okay? Like he... Obviously, this thing that existed in the sky supposedly wasn't a UBM until the light of the... of, like, a burning, you know, city, you know, cast its way up to it, and then
yes,
it decided...
I think there are instances where Jabberwock decides to reclassify something to UBM.
Hmm.
Okay, yeah. So it became a UBM. He had to punch the button, but it kind of got its consciousness, and then he's like, okay, well, I'll give it to it.
Yeah. Well, I think that, that's exactly what it... Because it says it was basically just like a rock floating in space or whatever, absorbing the light, until it suddenly became aware of violence.
Yeah. And I liked that they did kind of a parallel theme of, like, copying somebody. And, like, so obviously there's this player killer that comes into the story, and Ray and B3 have to deal with them. And this player killer, you know, you find out, was copying the armor set of B3. But they did, like, that dual thing where they both were copying, but they both didn't copy quite well enough. And they were just, you know, inferior to their originals. To, like, in terms of Black Sky, it was, you know, they just stole, you know, the emotion of this guy, but they never really became, like, the despair or whatever.
Well, and I think that it was that whole idea too, that they were like, it never even really thought about why it felt that and why, and you know, I liked how, well, and I like too that they bring out the whole thing that like when Rey destroys it and there's this beautiful light in the sky, that it's like it creates the complete counter behavior and emotional response from people. And I think that's kind of where that thought that it has that gets cut off was starting to move, was what if there's other ways, you know, like I only focused on this one idea and I've copied this idea constantly because it was something that made me feel something, but what if there was other ways that I could have felt things? Like, what?
And I think you're talking about like a creature that is very like inexperienced, like it has hyper intelligence, but it hasn't had like the experience to like, it has not experienced life, so of course it would focus on that one emotion. It's like imagine like a self-aware AI that's just being born in like in a second, like it doesn't have the experience that humans have, or the life experience, or anything. Like you could be like super intelligent, but if you have no practical experience, like you are very limited in your ability to do anything. And I think I think how the author writes that is very interesting and fascinating, because this creature is malicious, but it's hard to describe it. Like, it is a malicious entity, but it isn't by nature malicious.
It's a childlike maliciousness.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Like it really is written as basically a thing that became self-aware, but became self-aware because of one particular stimuli. And so instead of seeking out other stimuli, it just continues to focus on that one stimuli, right? Like, I think you're right, like Mirage, when you're saying it's almost childlike. It's that idea of like, you know, because kids, they become hyper focused on one thing for a long time, right? The one thing that they really love, they focus on it for a long time, you know, the favorite toy or whatever. And that's what this thing is like. It's like it became
pulling the wings of flies.
Let's not go there. But it is, though, right? Like, that is kind of the idea, is that this thing becomes aware of emotion, becomes aware of something other than just existing. But unfortunately, the moment it does that, it is this basically act of evil. And so that's what it copies, and it just keeps doing it because it associates it with that stimuli.
It doesn't know any better.
Right, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And then, I mean, it's locked underground, and all it does is just keep fostering that sort of thing. Like, it doesn't grow and develop because it's in stasis, basically. So it is interesting. Like, it is this, I thought it was kind of cool that they told things sort of from the monster's point of view. Cause, you know, how often do we just have these sort of kill the big monster of the week kind of thing? And you don't really get that backstory, or you don't get the motivation of the monster. It was sort of the same idea that when we talked about like volumes 1, 2, and 3, when we were talking about like the gang that Rey takes down.
Cannibalism.
Yeah. But like their whole thing was like they felt so inferior and so afraid because of the masters and what the masters were capable of doing. That was why they were doing these absolutely horrible things, because they were trying to find power that would put them on the same footing, so they didn't have to feel inferior. They didn't have to feel afraid. And I thought that was really interesting in terms of showing how the masters themselves, just because of the nature of their powers, can have almost a negative effect on this world as well, right? Like, by proxy. Like, it's not even like obviously, yeah, you can bomb the shit out of a forest or kill a city or whatever, but even just by existing and presenting that capability, you change the world without even directly acting on it, you know? I think this is one of those series that, I mean, if you dig deeper into it, it does have some cool ideas. And it does go places with the whole like freedom of choice that a lot of other stories don't. And I do enjoy the whole idea of characters being one way. Like, you know, we meet B3 in real life, and how she is in real life compared to how she is when she puts that armor on
Dude, she's mm-hmm. terrifying.
Yeah,
like, I'm just imagining, like, Doom rip and tear playing, like, high score.
Like, she's death metal for sure, dude. Like she goes from being this, you know, upstanding, prim, proper, helpful senpai to, like, psycho bloodthirst, like...
Rip and tear until it is done. I'm just imagining, like a lot of the side characters from, like, I'm just dying in a band, and as she goes, like, Rip and Tear, this playing, like, the Doom fear, like, All They Fear Is You, like, down, 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 down,
down, down, down, down, down, down, down, down, down. I loved how Ray was, like, she was, like, so concerned. Oh, if he found out I was a player killer or whatever. And then Ray's just like, nah, that doesn't really matter to me.
Yeah, right.
I'm friends with 20 player killers.
Right? Yeah. Well, yeah. And he's like, well, and she's like, you know, not even that I'm a PKer, but that also, you know, I have such a different personality in the game. And he's like, girl, like, yeah. Have you met my brother?
You're mild.
Like, right? like I'm friends with a journalist / superior killer. You know,
he's friends with Figaro.
Right? My brother walks around in a bear suit making bear puns and then turns around and, like, decimates an entire countryside and kills, like, 50,000 monsters in one go. Like, yeah, you're good. No problems.
He's like, yeah, you're like the most mild thing I've seen today. Like, I'm friends with a pimp, okay?
Yeah. And I loved at the end when they had the little cute interaction where... I forget, was it her name that they were talking about? Or
oh, yeah.
It was... Yeah, I think it was something about her and you know, she was like, well, you know, it's cool, isn't it? And she just gets, like, so embarrassed.
Yes, because they're like, should we call you Barbary now or should we call you B3? And she's like,
oh, yeah.
Well, call me B3 when I'm not in the armor, but when I wear the armor, call me Barbary. And they're like, for real?
She's like, Barbary senpai.
Well, I think it like, you know, it was just that, like, that sort of gamer geeky weeby sort of, like, thing, right? Like, you know.
Dude, like, I would love to have a name, like, B3.
Bloody Barbaroi.
Yeah, right?
Bad burn cool Barbaroi. As fuck.
Yeah, I thought that was, that was pretty funny, actually.
Blood, Blaze, Blitzkrieg.
But I mean, I think that is the one of the things that I like about this story, too, is like, yeah, I mean, all the side characters are kind of interesting and they all have these interesting backstories. And, you know, but given that they're not in the book a ton, I think that shows that the author's, like, pretty good with creating interesting characters because... Yeah, I totally read more B3 stuff, and yet she was only introduced, like, you know, 6 books into the series, right? So, yeah, no, I must admit, like, I basically powered through these 4 books all in one sitting, and I hadn't read Dendro since we did the last podcast, which I think is, like, what, a year and a half ago or something?
Mm-hmm. It's been a while.
It's been a while.
Yeah.
And I have to admit, I was sitting there and I'm reading these and I'm like, man, why is it I didn't keep going with this series?
Yeah, I gotta keep reading.
Oh, you are now.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I think, yeah, I'm gonna have to keep going. But I started buying the print books, so I'll have to wait a little while to get caught up. But oh, well, it's all good. All right. Well, you know what? We've been going for almost 2 hours, so...
Yeah, I'm getting tired, like I'm losing steam.
So I think we'll cut it off there. Our next episode, we are going to return to a Riki Kawahara series. The one that, funny enough, actually made him famous so that Sword Art Online could get released. I mean, it's sort of funny how that goes, but that's how it worked. And that is going to be Excel World. We're going to talk about the first, I think, 4 books in that one, because that's what their anime covered. And so that will be our next episode, and probably by then we'll have a couple more licenses to talk about as well. So, yeah. In any case, gentlemen, thank you very much for joining me tonight. And to, of course, you listeners, thank you very much for listening. And until next time, bye-bye for now.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
End recording.
For show notes and related links, visit lightnovelpodcast.com.